Welcome to Sideline Judgment. My name is Sergio.
My name is Tyler.
We have a jam-packed week, jam-packed episode to talk about today. We are going to be talking about a whole bunch of quick hits like we always do. The immortal, I feel like LeBron James is like Benjamin Button. I feel like he's just aging backwards. It's ridiculous.
Eventually he'll just turn into a baby.
Exactly. And that baby will still drop 44 points on anyone. We were also talking the Western Conference Finals, the Rockets and the Warriors, and I'd like to send a sincere prayer out to Chris Paul's hamstring. We'll also be doing our weekly Tweets We've Shared segment. Tyler is indulging me and is allowing me to talk about soccer. We're talking about the Champions League recap. Quick little recap as to what happened in the Champions League final. RIP Liverpool. Tyler, you're gonna take the reins. Talk about the Jacksonville Sharks midseason report. And then we're going to end it like we like to end it from now on, you know, our official moment of the week. But let's go ahead and start at the beginning. Tyler, I'm looking at our notes here for quick hits. A certain Gator's coming back.
Yes, a very certain Gator.
This happened today as well. We're recording on Tuesday, May 29th. This news broke today, right before we recorded.
And I was very happy when I heard it. Mm-hmm. The news is that Jalen Hudson is returning to Florida for his redshirt senior year, his final year of eligibility. He had entered the NBA draft without an agent, and the best offensive player that Florida has is coming back.
I got two words for that, Tyler.
What are the two words, Sergio?
God's plan. And I also noticed that that's four returning starters that we bring back. So that's Kayvon Allen, Keith Stone, Jalen Hudson now, and then who else? I'm missing the fourth one. Sorry, it's a
Hayes.
It's who?
Kabarrus Hayes.
Kabarrus Hayes, exactly, yeah. So
I believe they returned like a combined like 218 games of starting experience or something like that. I saw a stat, something like that.
Yeah, some ridiculous amount of experience, which is good. The absence of Chris Chioza is gonna be felt. A moment of silence. That was for Chris Chioza's Gator career. We love that man. But yeah, his absence is really going to be felt. He's the all-time assist leader. But I feel like this is good for us. You know, this is a good move or good luck for the Gators. But I'm very happy. And I also think Hudson's draft stock is going to improve with this next year. I really like this rule that the NBA has, that so long as you don't hire an agent, you're allowed to test the waters. I feel like they should do this in the NFL as well. They should do this in all sports that have like a major draft. Test the waters. Talk to the team, see if something is good. And then if not, then you can just go back and return to school, you know, and try to improve yourself.
I mean, I agree. This is something that like I wish we could find ways to put more into sports. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the good thing that happens with this is that typically it's basketball players are allowed. It happens every summer. The way it works out is that right. They basically move over the summer classes. Spring semester is kind of over during that weird dead period. And they like Jalen Hudson was still working out with the team this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So like it allows them to do that. In other sports, like the way the seasons worked out, if you do this in football, then they're basically testing the waters for a whole couple, like 2 months,
mm-hmm.
and they're skipping classes in spring practice. So like that's something that you got to work through. But I think this is a very advantageous thing. I'm glad that Jalen Hudson went out and tested the waters,
mm-hmm.
saw that he didn't really like what he was getting, and decided to come back. I think this is huge for the Gators because of they only lost three players and really only two players mm-hmm. in the offseason because John Gruden never played this last season. But they lost Igor Kulichov and the GOAT, Chris Chioza.
The GOAT. Did you just say the GOAT, Chris Chioza?
The GOAT cheese.
That's the first time I've ever heard you say the GOAT cheese. So happy about that.
The goat cheese. They lost him, and while he wasn't a prolific scorer, I would say, mm-hmm. he is an extremely veteran presence, and it's something that you have to you don't want to also lose when you lose your senior leader and another senior kind of a senior leader in Kulichov,
mm-hmm.
you don't want to lose your best offensive player
exactly.
by far.
Exactly.
And
now,
they didn't.
That could be taken as some disrespect to Kayvon Allen, but to be real, he didn't show up last year. All that potential from his first and second year didn't show up his junior year. So now he's got his senior year to prove us wrong. But it's nice to have that other option with Jalen Hudson and bringing that experience in from having a great last year. You know, the players, when you play together, you understand players' tendencies. You understand your teammates, the way they play, the way things happen. So it's always a good thing to bring back familiarity. Anything else to say on the Hudson situation?
Did fun fact, did you know that he knows LeBron James, like personally?
Do tell.
Apparently, I believe that he went to LeBron's high school. So
Oh, he went to
LeBron,
St. Vincent St. Mary?
I think so.
Oh, wow.
I just know that he has met him and he has his phone number. They follow each, like he follows LeBron follows him on Twitter and all that, and like they talk. So
Don't be
that's.
surprised if Jalen Hudson gets signed to Clutch Sports, which is not LeBron's talent agency, but it's Rich's his best friend. So
It's
don't be
LeBron's
surprised.
talent agency. What are you talking about?
Oh no, it is. I'm just saying,
Don't
you
spread lies on this podcast.
know. All right, moving on to something not as exciting, not as happy, at least in our opinion on Sideline Judgment. The NFL announced that the owners unanimously announced that they are requiring the players to stand for the national anthem or give them the option of staying in the locker room, but with the caveat that there could be a 15-yard penalty if players decide to not stand for the anthem if they come out onto the field during the anthem presentation. You and I did not like this news. We texted and Twitter DM'd each other back and forth about it earlier in the week when it happened. Why don't you tell them what you told me over Twitter DMs through multiple tweets and multiple conversations that we had about your feelings about the anthem rule?
Well, my biggest really feeling is I just feel it's very spineless. And it's really more
Wait, the
about,
NFL? Spineless? No.
I know, wild
Wild
developments coming here on
assertion,
the
yeah.
podcast, but it's such a stupid rule. This is like backing a Band-Aid on a bullet wound, is what it's such a, I just feel like it's a rule that I would rather them, honestly, depending on what, whether you agree with the player's right to kneel or not, I would rather them just have a rule that says you can't do this or you can.
Right.
Not like you can, like, well, you can't really, but you can also like do this weird protest where we just kind of shove you off to the side and
Where it's
get you out of sight.
exactly to me, what that rule tells me is out of sight, out of mind. You know,
Yeah.
they're not gonna agitate a large portion of their fan base that is very hoorah over standing over the flag. Which, and that's your right. That's I, you know, while I may not agree with that, that's your right to find it, and that's part of the beauty of living in this country, the fact that we can, in theory, live harmoniously with different points of view. But I'm with you on that. I feel like it's very, I think it's irresponsible because it's not even taking into consideration the reasonings behind. We forget that the reason that Colin Kaepernick started this in the first place was because, well, he started it by sitting, and then he talked to a veteran and said, "How can I understand and express my point of view without disrespecting the veterans and all that?" And he said, "Take a knee. It's more respectful." And then now, all of a sudden, we've turned it into Kaepernick hates, you know, and Malcolm Jenkins and Chris Long and all of these players that have come to the forefront of this movement are seen as anti-patriotic and anti-pro and anti-military. Well, that's not the case. You know, it's kind of like when you're a kid and you get in trouble with something with your mother, and your mother's trying to explain to you the root of the problem, but all you focus on is the punishment. Like, you don't
Yeah.
understand why you're being punished. You're just mad because you didn't get to watch TV for a week or because you couldn't go out and play with your friends for a week. You know what I mean? You don't understand the root of the problem. And until you go down and you understand the root of the protest and the reasoning and speak to people, and there's an open line of communication between the league and the players and the Players Association, we're never going to move forward.
I agree. And I just really, I mean, that's my whole thing with that. I just feel that this is a very spineless policy. Like I've said, it's just that it just backdoors its way out of it. It doesn't take a stand, and in a way, it's like it was. We said before, it's trying to do out of sight, out of mind. But in a way, like it's just going to further the problem, because it's not dealing with the issue. It's not sitting down and talking with it. It's create a ruling that is just more problematic, and just will create further divide.
Yep, I agree. And one person that has kind of taken that to the forefront is the owner of the New York Jets, whose name I forget and whose name I don't know because I am not a Jets fan. But honestly, I have to salute, take my hat off, and pay him some respect. He said he would pay the fines that would come with any of the player protests. To me, that is leadership at its finest. Is a person saying, "Look, I don't agree. I will be standing for the flag. I will be standing for the flag. I will be doing this, but I'm sorry. I apologize. I will stand by my players. You know, I think that shows tremendous leadership, and there's some unity in that Jets locker room and within that organization, knowing that the person at the top of their pyramid, of their structural organizational pyramid, is behind them. And while he may not agree, he supports their right to protest. So shout out to you. You will never hear me say go and then the word of that team, Tyler. We are not adopting an Our Jets motto on this podcast. I'd like to inform you that.
Oh, you see it. I was about to say it. I was about to say it. You beat me to it.
I had to shut it down before you got that idea in your head. Anything else to say about the anthem, Roar, anything?
I don't think there really is much to say, and we'll certainly talk about this more as it goes forward, and as we get closer to the season.
Right. When we do our NFL,
how the dynamics play out.
Exactly. When we see how it affects the play on the field and all that stuff. Moving on to the big topic of discussion this week, the NBA playoffs. So in the East, we have LeBron James winning a Game 7 over the Boston Celtics. Notice I said LeBron James and not the Cleveland Cavaliers, winning a Game 7 over the Boston Celtics on the road, 87-79. LeBron James, listen to the stat line: 35 points, 15 rebounds, and 9 assists on 48 minutes. LeBron played every single second of this basketball game, Tyler.
I did notice that, and I thought that was just insanely amazing.
Mm-hmm. It's superhuman. And what was crazy was that in this game, you had serious, serious play coming out of Jason Tatum, the rookie. He had 24 points, 7 rebounds, and only 1 assist. But he was balling. He dunked on LeBron. LeBron does not get dunked on.
Yeah, well, that is the reason LeBron doesn't get dunked on. That kind of spelled the doom for them.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. My favorite is seeing the reaction of Tatum when he bumps him after the dunk, and LeBron kind of looks over his shoulder in like a way that like Thanos would look over and like be scary into the camera, you know, in that sort of way. And at that moment, I was like, the Boston's going crazy. They're up by like 4 points or something, and it's like, oh my god, wow, Boston's gonna win this game. They're gonna dethrone LeBron. And LeBron looked over and said, oh, it's over. And at that moment, I said, oh, game over. LeBron's gonna go off. It's done. But yeah, let's talk about this game. What'd you think watching this game? Because a big thread here is Boston got open shots, but they couldn't knock anything down.
Well, I think that a lot of it comes with, and just to give credit to us, we were basically right in that we said that the Cavs were going to win Game 6,
mm-hmm.
And then it's going to be 3-3. They were going to go to Boston, and it was going to be the only time this season that Boston lost at home
in the playoffs.
Postseason. Yeah.
Right.
And because LeBron's experience would shine through, and that's exactly what happened. Because at the end of the game, LeBron was leading his team. They were playing smart ball. And I saw somebody say this, that the Celtics were playing hero ball.
Mm-hmm.
And the young players of the Celtics, like when they got down there, all they wanted to do is jack it up a three.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, and the time starting down, do I want to like try and set up a play? Nope, jack up a three.
Right.
And it was about a three, four point game. So like any of those threes that they've made, we would be looking back on that as like an amazing play.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality of it is because they weren't made, you kind of see the flaw in decision making that all these younger players just wanted. They got freaked out. They just wanted so desperately to win.
Right.
And the experience, and in that moment, the experience of LeBron shined forth. It was kind of strange. I will say. Like weird plays, like that crazy LeBron pass.
Yes, yeah, the one you texted me on.
Yeah, that was amazing.
My thing with this game was that I agree with you about the experience of LeBron, but I think it came in a different way. Rather than I didn't really see him as I did see hero ball in moments, but it's not like they weren't getting good looks. Like if I'm watching that, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, I would take that shot. Like, if I'm in that situation, I take that shot. I think it's a good shot. The problem is that, you know how when you sometimes get too anxious and the adrenaline's pumping, but you don't know how to channel it properly? That's what I felt watching this basketball game. I feel like the Celtics, a young team, they missed Kyrie Irving in game seven, not only by the productivity on the floor, but the calmness and the leadership in the huddle. Kyrie Irving, lest we forget that Kyrie Irving is the one who hit the game-winning three-pointer over Steph Curry in game seven of the NBA Finals. Like, Kyrie hit the biggest shot at the biggest possible stage ever. Like, he's calm under pressure. It's that kind of, he wants the ball in his hands and he can do it. This was kind of a thing of like, they were like, oh, I want to be the hero. You're right, like the hero, but I want to be the hero. It's open, I'm going to take it. But they just couldn't channel that energy properly. Meanwhile, LeBron, because he's playing 48 minutes, has to learn how to, you know, rest on the field, on the court. You know, take time, take plays off when he can take plays off, be a little lackadaisical on defense when he can. And because of that, he kind of channeled and knew exactly when to pinpoint. He was like Randy Orton, knowing exactly when to hit an RKO. You know?
Yeah.
And to some people, that's going to go right over their heads, but, you know.
Yeah, this is very true.
Yeah, but I mean, he's very efficient. That's what I felt.
He's very efficient the way he was.
Yeah, that's how I felt. And then he got some productivity from his... from his teammates.
Yeah, that was the biggest.
Jeff Green had 19 points. He played 42 minutes and had 19 points.
Kevin Love didn't even play.
No, Kevin Love was in concussion protocol. He didn't play. J.R. Smith had 12 points. He went 3-for-8 from three, which was much better than before. They had a good game. And someone you would think, Kyle Korver, only had 3 points. He only had 1-3 on 18 minutes. So. But like before we move on to the Cavs, to the Rockets and Warriors, big salute to Boston. We have to be worried about this team because next year when they get Hayward back, they get Kyrie back, it's dangerous. It's going to be dangerous because now players like Terry Rozier,
Marcus Smart,
Jaylen Brown, and even Tatum, instead of playing 38 to 45 minutes in an important game, they'll be playing something like 28, 30, 25, 30, which will be good because they can be fresh. They can be move forward.
Don't forget Gator Great Al Horford.
How can I forget? 17 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. But what he was most effective on was the defensive end. You know, he shut down Tristan Thompson again. Tristan Thompson had 10 points on 35 minutes. You know?
Yeah, so. Boston played a really well, good series. It was amazing how good they were this whole season without what we would consider their two best players.
Exactly, especially the postseason because they weren't favorited in every single series that they were in, and they ended up going to the last possible game of the playoffs before the finals.
It's amazing. And now, like, kind of as we will eventually transition to the other conference final. Mm-hmm. It's amazing to me how the way that this game was played is different from the way the other game was played to me. This to me felt to me more like a tactical game.
If I felt like I was watching with a scoreline of 87 to 79 in this day and age in today's NBA, it's an anomaly. Like, I don't understand how. I don't understand how they could hold these teams to so little points
with so many talented players.
Yeah, it felt like a game in 2008 rather than 2018. You know,
correct.
So
I mean, as much as like we all love threes and everything, but it was fun to watch.
It was because it brought me back as to why. Well, first of all, watching LeBron be himself is always a great time, but it was just nice seeing defense being put importance rather than just kind of spread the floor, drive in, kick out to an open three, or ISO ball, which is a lot of what we saw in the other game. And don't get me wrong, that's great because when the Warriors are firing on all cylinders, it's one of the greatest things to watch on all sports, full stop, you know? But, yeah, I'm with you on that. Shall we move on? Last takes on this game?
We shall just remember that LeBron James is the greatest player on the planet.
I tweeted this and I said LeBron James is my GOAT and don't even try to change my mind. We can have a LeBron versus MJ podcast episode.
I'm going to have to bring multiple guests on. We'll have to like interview multiple guests and play their takes and then break them down.
Oh yeah, Courtney Mims, friend of the pod, Courtney Mims, we need to have a conversation because she... is not in agreement. She does not agree with me at all. We need her on. We need to bring Michael on. Maybe your dad, who was around during the MJ days, you know, saw him in his prime.
Yeah, Mister, I can't describe to you how much better MJ was.
Does he really? Is he one of those guys?
I got to bring up a story. Go ahead. I was talking to him we were watching a couple games earlier for the Western Conference Finals,
mm-hmm.
and we were talking about players, and we transitioned to, he asked me, who do you think is the greatest three-point shooter of all time?
Three-point shooter?
Yeah, and I was like, well, obviously Steph Curry.
And then did he say Ray Allen?
No, he's just like, Steph Curry. He's like, Reggie Miller is the greatest three-point shooter of all time. All
right, listen, I love your dad, but with all due respect, Steph Curry hits three-pointers. I can't entertain that. That's a Skip Bayless thing.
No, here's the thing, though, is that we were watching the Western Conference Finals again. We were watching the Western Conference Finals Game 7, and he just sees these threes that Curry makes, and he's like, I may have to revisit my tape. I was like, you bet you're damn right.
Listen, man, Curry's the greatest three-point shooter. Curry might be the greatest shooter, period, of all time.
True.
And he's still got quite a few years left on him. All right, cool. Let's go ahead and transition. Speaking of that game, let's go ahead and talk about Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals. The Houston Rockets fell to the Golden State Warriors 101-92 in Game 7 in Houston. Curry, 27 points, 9 boards, 10 assists. Harden, 32 points, 6-6. But while it looks like a decent number, it's a matter of when those points came and how those points came. There's a lot of – James Harden takes a lot of slack because it doesn't show up in playoff games. And while he showed up, he did not take over as that man. You know, first of all, you can't let Kevin Durant get 34 points. You can't let Steph drop 27. You can't let that happen. You know, it's just not feasible. Especially when you get 0 points out of Trevor Ariza. Trevor Ariza had 0 points. He went 0-12.
That to me.
0-12. He played 42 minutes and he had 0 points. The biggest story of this game is the Rockets were getting open shots and they could not buy a three-pointer on the black market, dude. They could not hit a single shot. It was insane. I've never seen anything like it. Live by the three, die by the three. They went full Ned Stark.
I mean, I've been to Houston. I've been in that arena. Uh-huh. It's not that cold. There's no explanation for this.
Very well done, Tyler. Very well.
I was in that arena. That's like, this place is not that cold. I was going to a concert. I brought a jacket with me. Never used it. It's just amazing in this day and age. Like missing 27 straight threes. That's something that I do.
Especially the timing of it. Because they missed 27 straight threes in like the third and fourth quarter. Like in the moment where they need to hit threes. And I'm telling you, they hit three of those three-pointers, they win this game. Because they can put it ahead, they can put distance between them, they can play Curry and Clay physical, and they can do what they did in game 5. But man, it doesn't happen. But also, we also gotta talk about the elephant in the room. Chris Paul didn't play.
I don't know if you'll consider this a hot take, but I don't. If Chris Paul plays, I think they win.
That's not a hot take at all.
I mean, he is worth the point differential.
Yeah, they lost by 9 points. But if you look at it, it was once again the Warriors had a huge third quarter. Chris Paul gets hot. I don't know, man.
I think he was basically coaching from the bench.
Oh, 100%. He went full Cristiano Ronaldo at the Euros.
I mean, he went
full LeBron games during a regular season game.
Very true.
Full coach.
So I feel bad for Chris Paul. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the reason I feel worse for Chris Paul than I do for James Harden not making the finals again is, one, Chris Paul's never gone to the finals.
Well, Chris Paul has never made it out of the second round of the playoffs in his entire career. Let's start with that. So this was his first time in the conference finals.
And the weirdest thing about it is that Chris Paul plays so well in the playoffs.
Yeah.
He generally plays very well. It's just the Williams or the Clippers, they just couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But now, I mean, it's just really unlucky. Basically, in my opinion, he basically won them two games.
Mm-hmm.
He won them game three and four, in my opinion.
I think he won them game three and four, and I think he jump-started the game five performance. You know? You feel me? He jump-started the game five performance.
Go ahead. I thought he was going to be out for game six, and he'd come back for game seven.
Mm-hmm.
But, it was literally probably the worst possible thing. Rockets lose Chris Paul, and they miss 27 straight threes.
Mm-hmm.
The team that was the most efficient three-point shooting team that season. Not to say that they're better than Golden State at that, but they're not supposed to be bad, and they were horrible.
Yeah, it was one of the weirdest second halves from the Rockets I've ever seen.
It was like it was meant to be.
Yeah, it was poetic. Because if you think about it, LeBron takes over. LeBron plays 48 minutes, gets to the finals, is exhausted. And what's his reward? He's got to play the Warriors for the fourth year in a row.
Yeah. I honestly think it's more impressive that I kind of like it more, to be honest with you, that the Warriors and Cavs are in the finals again. Just really? Because of how much happened this season that everybody was like, it's not going to happen. This is the year that it's all going to change.
Mm-hmm.
There might not even be Warriors or Cavs making it out of the East and the West. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of like to see a testament, I think it's kind of fun.
No, I think it's outstanding. I think it's a look, dynasties are good. As much as people hate them, dynasties are good. Real Madrid just won their third Champions League in a row. We'll get to that later on in the show. But as much as I'm not a fan of that, they're good. It's good for the sport. People will recognize it. Basketball, Warriors, Cavs, fourth year in a row. It's good. It's good for the sport. It's good for narratives. You know, the whole thing. If LeBron can win this finals, he is he is undoubtedly better. You know, surpass Michael Jordan if that happens. You know, he's playing with nobody. No one is on his team, and he took him to the finals. Like, come on, man.
Yeah. He dragged this team.
He dragged this team on his back.
Dragged them.
Anything else that you want to say about this Western Conference series before we move on? Before we move on to tweets we've shared?
What do you want to talk about? Just our kind of predictions for the actual finals? For the finals,
yes. And we can make it really quick because it's going to be Warriors in five.
I have a feeling. I've got a feeling it might be Warriors in six. LeBron's not going to get swept.
No, he's not. No, LeBron just will not get swept.
He's going to win the one game. But it's kind of weird in that the Warriors, as great as they are, they just have not been as – they've been more dysfunctional this season.
Mm-hmm.
They're just liable to mask all of their issues.
Right.
Because they're just so good at shooting threes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's their margin for error is a lot wider than most teams. But I feel like – I mean, I think it was going to be Warriors in six last year if it weren't for Kevin Durant just basically winning Warriors one game like the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
In that game that the Cavs basically outplayed them the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it has a chance to be Warriors in six.
Okay.
I think I'd probably predict Warriors in five though.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I know LeBron will show up, but I don't know if his teammates will.
Right, I'm gonna go Warriors in five, and I think the Cavs win game three. If we're being specific, I think the Cavs win game three, and let me rephrase that. I think LeBron wins game three, because think about it. It took LeBron 48 minutes to beat a young, inexperienced, albeit well coached, but young and inexperienced Celtics team that was missing Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward. You mean to tell me that he's going to go up and if he has to play? That's what I'm saying. Like, if LeBron wins two games in this series, I think we don't need to have a conversation. I think LeBron is undoubtedly number one on my list, but I don't know.
I mean, it's tough for me to judge because I just don't know a lot about – I just don't actually have watched a lot of Michael Jordan. Mm. He's just a legendary, like, hype to me. But like, I've never seen a grip.
Go back and watch some YouTube, some clips, because I've done that in my time. When I was kind of on that like fence of like, how good is LeBron, and is LeBron really better than Jordan or whatever, I had to go back and see, and Jordan's dominant. Jordan was head and shoulders the most dominant player. But I also put them both, I say if LeBron in his prime is playing Jordan in his prime, one-on-one, who wins? And LeBron, if they're playing at 15, LeBron wins 15-3, 15-5. Like, it's just not – he's so much more physical. He's so much better. He's smart. I'm not going to say smarter, but he's very smart in the game. I don't know, man. But this is turning into a LeBron-Michael conversation, and we want to save that for later on. Anything else on the finals?
Not finals, but last thing. Mm-hmm. Real quick question, and you're going to give me a real quick answer.
Got it.
Where is LeBron playing next year? Regardless of what happens in this finals.
Regardless of what happens in this finals?
Well, I mean, if you have two different answers, then you can give them.
Okay. I think LeBron is playing either in Los Angeles. I got three. I think LeBron's in L.A., he's in Philly, or he's in Houston. I think the L.A. one is the one that's been pushed the most. I think it can happen. They have the space. You know, he wants to set up his empire afterwards, and when he retires, get that. Philly, if they move some pieces around, if they make a trade, if they do that kind of thing, I think he would be intrigued at playing with Embiid and playing with Simmons, simply because it would be something different, where it would be like he would become like a mentor figure in that sense. I also see Houston if he's like super power hungry and super win now. I want to win titles right now. I see Houston if they can unload Anderson's contract. If they can trade that away and free up some cap space and talk to Chris Paul and have him sign a more team-friendly deal to be able to give LeBron some money, I think I can see that happening. I think LeBron playing with Chris Paul is intriguing. Could you imagine that five? That five would be James Harden, Chris Paul, LeBron James, Capella, and Trevor Ariza.
Damn.
And then coming off the bench, they'd have to unload Ryan Anderson. Coming off the bench, they'd have PJ Tucker, who they signed for another year. And then from there, you just have to pick up some more players. If they can re-sign Gerald Green, that'd be good for them.
There's always the draft.
Huh?
There's always the draft.
Yeah, there's always the draft. It'd have to kind of be a signing trade, kind of like what Miami did, which is why we're having draft problems now, because we don't have picks, because we traded them in signing trades. So that's my answer.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's either – I think it's Philly and Houston are the big ones for what you said. I don't think he's going to go to L.A. I just don't – just don't feel it. I think a really, really, really sleeper one would be San Antonio, just because I know he wants to play for
Pop.
Popovich.
Well, that's if Pop coaches anymore, because Pop lost his wife this past year, and God rest her soul. And, you know, I hope we're still doing well, recovering from that personal tragedy. Wish him nothing but the best. But, you don't know what the situation is, or if he'll be the same. You know, you don't know. He lost. They were married for like 42 years, and they were together for like almost 50. Like,
goals. That's
a lot. Goals, man, goals. All right. So moving on from the NBA, or do you have?
That's it. No, that's it for me.
Cool. Moving on from the finals, we're gonna go into one of my favorites, one of Tyler's favorites, tweets we shared. We're doing one tweet this week because time purposes, it's kind of late. Tyler, go ahead and share with me your favorite tweet that I sent you this week.
The favorite tweet that we sent a lot of great tweets back and forth.
This was a good week.
The content was screaming. I wish you guys were able to see it.
Yeah.
But my favorite tweet, and this is my favorite tweet you sent me, not only for what it made me like laugh,
uh-huh,
but also because of the conversation that it spurred between us, was a tweet you sent me by Daniel Gilman. Uh-huh. And it said that the Cavs are that one team at the front court at Southwest Rec who is just carried by the one superstar. For all University of Florida people, or the people who aren't University of Florida, Southwest Rec is the main recreational center,
mm-hmm,
at University of Florida for students. It has like five basketball courts.
I think it's one, two, three, four, five, six. Six
basketballs. Six. So, yeah. The great thing about
explain,
this week
explain
was,
why court one is so important.
Because it's got, well, I mean, to me, it's got the benches.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, yes, that is true. But court one is important because it's where the best players play. Like when you play pickup.
I mean, yeah.
When you play pickup, court one is the first court that you see, and it's always got the best players, the best pickup players playing. If you're playing on court one, you can play pickup basketball.
You can actually play.
You can actually play. Yeah, I've played.
I always go, I go to like the secret back ones so that I can practice my shot.
Okay, I play on court two, and then when there's an opening on court one, I slide in and I'm Kyle Korver.
Nah, I mean, as part of the conversation we had is that I noted that I am literally J.R. Smith when I play basketball. I will occasionally hit three straight threes, and I have done this. I hit three straight threes in a game, and then I'm literally useless beyond that.
And then I said that I'm typically the Kyle Korver role on that team, where I'm solid defensively, can do a really good pass, but honestly, I'm just there to stretch the court and hit.
You're a body. You're
I'm
body.
A body. I'm a transition three guy. I'm a shooter. You know, when my friends play with me, I'm a shooter. They get me the ball, give me some space, I can hit a three. Tyler, yeah. I enjoyed that.
I'm still learning how to do a hook shot.
Oh, well, you're a taller person, so yeah, that would be
Well,
sense.
Yeah, I mean, like, I gotta develop my game, man. I'm one of my senior year.
Honestly, I'm surprised you didn't pick the one that I sent you. It says, "You look nothing like NCAA 18 by Isaiah Henney." Which quoted,
you know, I wanted to.
Some girl was like, "I'm what you've always dreamed of," and someone quote, and Isaiah Henney quoted it and said, "You look nothing like NCAA 18," which spawned Tyler and I to fantasize about NCAA 18.
I want it so bad.
But that is not my tweet, my friend. My favorite tweet that you sent me is by the one and only Marco Wilson at MJW underscore era, and he says, and I quote, "Chick-fil-A is trash." And it's one of those unpopular opinion tweets.
Boys testing my patience.
Marco, you know we love you on the pod. But boy, who did you dirty? What are you really mad about, Marco? Explain to me why you are taking your frustrations out on some delicious chicken.
You know what this means, though, right?
That Quincy's the better Wilson brother?
I mean, obviously, but yeah. Zaxby's dropped the bag.
Zaxby's dropped.
They dropped the bag.
Tyler, you're on to something.
Because they know, like all people with rational head know, that he will eventually be a first round pick.
Oh yeah.
They want the Chick-fil-A slander out there. They want it to be a story when the draft comes around.
Tyler.
And they want to promote Zaxby's. Zaxby's dropped the bag.
Tyler, if in 2 years we find out that if we see Marco on a Zaxby's commercial, it's an emergency podcast.
It might, or Popeye's, because I remember later he tweeted, he's like, "Nah, Popeye's chicken's better." Popeye's or Zaxby's dropped the bag. We got to investigate.
We need to send a sideline judgment private investigator into this whole. What chicken brand dropped the bag for Marco Wilson? Marco, we're on to you, bro. We're on to. I mean, get your money. I fully support.
We support it. But
I hope at night.
We're trying to investigate a journalist.
Of course, I hope at night you clutch a spicy chicken sandwich. hope you secretly love it, dude. But that was my tweet of the week. I thought it was very important.
It is very important. The best was Quincy Wilson's. Not only that he's better Wilson brother. Mm-hmm. But then his response, just like actual response on Twitter.
Oh, he said, "You're wild."
In a very disapproving tone.
In a very disapproving tone, yeah. Which, honestly, that's why he's the better Wilson brother, in my opinion.
We don't disparage the sacred hand of Chick-fil-A.
We're gonna be hiring what are they called when they outsource writers? Not consultants, but you know what I'm talking about? When you write for like multiple, like when you write for The Ringer and Washington Post and New York Times, staff writer, we're multiple staff writers. We're going to be hiring staff investigators to come out and help us on the ground in Gainesville since we're not there this summer. During summer fall camp, make sure somebody can get on that. I really hope some of the beat reporters ask him this question. Like, what's your beef? Like, what's the deal, dude? Why are you hating the good chicken? All right, cool. That's been Tweets We've Shared, our favorite segment. We're going to move on to the Champions League recap. These are the champions. My favorite song of all time, Champions League theme song. Da, 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 the champions. Ugh, goosebumps. The Champions League final was this past week, Tyler. Just give me 2 minutes. That's all I need. It was Real Madrid from Spain playing Liverpool from England. In a game that was really exciting. You were going with Liverpool's high-pressing system by Jurgen Klopp, who kind of invented the gegenpress, and then going up against Zinedine Zidane's Real Madrid, which was packed with Cristiano Ronaldo, Luka Modric, Gareth Bale, Karim Benzema, Sergio Ramos, Marcelo, stacked with players. But on the other side, in Liverpool, you got Mohamed Salah, you got Roberto Firmino, Sané, Henderson, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Virgil van Dijk, great players. The game ended 3-1 to Real Madrid, but we gotta send a sideline judgment care package to Karius, who is the goalkeeper for Liverpool. He's a German international. He made two enormous mistakes. Have you seen any of the highlights, Tyler?
I have. I watched the highlights. I watched the recap of the game.
It was rough. Because
I was at a graduation while that was happening.
Uh-huh.
It was rough.
It was rough, man. The first goal was scored by Benzema. Karius sees Dejan Lovren, the Liverpool center back, out of the corner of his eye, and he goes to roll it out to start a counterattack, and Benzema just kind of pokes his foot in front of it, and it's redirected into the goal, and boom, 1-0. Very unfortunate. And then the third goal was a Gareth Bale strike from 35 yards out, and it just hit him in the hands, and he couldn't control it and went past them. I felt so bad for him. If you watch the highlights after the game, they showed him going over to the Liverpool fans in the stadium, and he's bawling his eyes out. He's in tears. He's apologizing. He's saying, "I'm so sorry." But nothing but respect to the Liverpool fans for showing pure class to their player. They applauded him. They said, "It's all right. We understand. It's just a couple mistakes." A big thumbs down, though, to a big segment of Twitter, or a small segment of Twitter that ended up sending him death threats for those two mistakes. We often think about oh, it's just sports, but I tell people all the time, soccer or football in other countries is bigger than any sport that we have here. The magnitude and the importance of the game overseas is tremendous, and sometimes you get these wild people who take matters into their own hands in the extreme. So wish him nothing but the best in a good emotional recovery, because I know that's got to be very hard on him. Also, Mohamed Salah. Yeah, Mohamed Salah has kind of been that breakout player in global soccer this year. He plays for Egypt, and they'll be in the World Cup. He went out in the 25th minute with a dislocated shoulder, but it turns out it was a muscular separation. So we wish him nothing but the best. The Egyptian doctors say that he should be back for the World Cup in a few weeks. So I hope he does well. I hope his recovery is good. Praying for Salah. But the big talking point is Gareth Bale with this beautiful bicycle kick for the second goal. He comes on as a substitute in the 65th minute. And in the 68th minute, he finds a beautiful spot and bicycles the ball into the corner. Outstanding, pure class. And the cool thing, after the game, they were talking to him and they were saying, because he's kind of been a bench player coming off the bench and stuff, but he's good enough to start anywhere. And they said, how do you feel about, maybe going back to the Premier League one day? The English media asked him, and he said, "Well, I got to be playing week in and week out. And so I'll spend the summer thinking about it, and I'll talk to my agent, and we'll see what our best decision is." So it's like, whoa, you score two games and you win the Champions League for Madrid, and then you're talking about leaving the next season. So some cool stuff to look out for. But that's pretty much it. That's pretty much what happened. Personally, I wanted Liverpool to win because I'm just tired of seeing Real Madrid win. And I love the way that Liverpool plays. That high press intensity is just so, so attractive. It's fun. It's high press. It's a good goal. And I love Salah. He's a great player. Mohamed Salah is an outstanding footballer and an even better person. So wish him nothing but the best in his recovery. Hope to see him in the World Cup with Egypt. We will talk more about Mohamed Salah and the players that you need to watch later on. June 11th, we will be recording our World Cup special, and we'll be publishing it on June 12th before June 14th, which is the start of the FIFA World Cup. I am so excited. Do not forget about this, ladies and gentlemen. It's the greatest sporting event on earth. I'm sorry, Olympics people, but this is a bigger sporting event than the Olympics. It's got more magnitude across the globe. And I'm very excited. You know, I bought my Columbia World Cup jersey last week. It came in the mail, Tyler.
Nice.
I'm all ready. My grandparents from Peru brought me the official Peru jersey. So I got my Peru jersey. I got my Colombia jersey. I'm ready to support the culture, support my families, my heritage. And, yeah, just wishing really enjoyable. Still sad U.S. isn't in it, but kind of made my...
The pain is subsiding, you know, slowly.
See, subsiding is a strong word. The pain is just still fresh. I think I don't... Tyler, I don't think I'm going to be okay until after the World Cup's over. Then we can move on, take a breath, and we're on the same level of playing field as everyone else. But yeah, so that was Champions League. Be on the lookout for our World Cup preview. Like I said, going to be up the 12th, the 13th, before the 14th of June's kickoff. It'll be great, and I'll be giving you guys a weekly recap of the World Cup on every single one of our episodes throughout the month, throughout the World Cup. So stay tuned. Be great. We may even have a special guest. I may even do some interviews. I may even bring my stepdad Raul back on the show, talk about some World Cup stuff. May have my uncle convince him to do a little recording there. So be on the lookout for those. We may be doing those in a bit. But Champions League was not the only thing that was exciting this weekend, Tyler. A certain friend of mine, a certain co-host of mine, by the name of Tyler, who I'm speaking to right now, is an intern for the Jacksonville Sharks. Tyler, you want to give us a midseason recap? How are your Sharks doing, my man? How's it going in the arena football?
All right. So the Jacksonville Sharks, I am a multimedia intern for them, so very well acquainted with the team.
Follow that account, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, please. Please follow that account. I tweet good content. I would like to tweet more.
He edits good videos.
Thank you.
Yeah, I like that. I enjoyed the starting off with the parachute, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I love doing that. So yeah. The cool thing about arena football, specifically the NAL and the Jacksonville Sharks, because we've been doing this for a while, is every home game has a theme. So we have Hawaiian night. We had military appreciation night the other week, which was the reason that we had a army officer kind of parachute from the ceiling, which is not as dangerous as it sounds, but it's also just as dangerous as it sounds. next, we have superhero night, and then later in the season, we'll have Star Wars night. So I'm excited for that.
You mean to tell me you didn't coordinate Star Wars with May the 4th?
I don't make this schedule.
Oh my gosh.
All right?
Okay.
I don't make, like, don't give me that. But it's the Sharks have played 8 games, so we're about halfway through the season. So this is kind of our mid-season recap, just to let the audience know, because we don't need to do a week-by-week breakdown of these, but the Sharks are 5-3, and they're on a 4-game win streak, but it's been a tough road this season. So the Sharks, basically, they started their first game, they defeated Carolina Cobras at home, away, 41-38. They wouldn't win again until, that was April 7th, they wouldn't win again until May. They lost 3 consecutive games, a heartbreaker to the Massachusetts Pirates, then another heartbreaker to the Columbus Lions, and then they just got destroyed by the Carolina Cobras at home. And the reason for this all being is some of the star players of the team were no longer on the team by the end of the first game. Multiple different reasons, but the team had to go through major shakeup. It was like Jordan Scarlett getting suspended 4 days before the Michigan game.
Eesh.
It's one of those things where it's like the team wasn't really prepared for it. But they signed a couple of veteran players from other arena from past arena teams, and they've been on a 4-game winning streak. They've defeated the Maine Mammoths twice, once home, one away. Defeated the worst team in the league, the Lehigh Valley Steelhawks. And they just came off a 47-42 win at the Massachusetts Pirates. So overall, right now, good year by the team. Offenses, the team's weird. So last year, they brought in a new head coach for an interim, and they won the championship.
Oh, that's casual.
All good things, all good things. But he runs practice a little bit differently. He's more of an offensive guy. which you kind of need to be in the Arena League just because the Arena League is, like, very pass heavy. But the Sharks have the number one rushing offense in the league, led by Jacksonville star Derek Ross.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been good. Now, the leading rushing offense of the league is, like, 200 total yards.
Oh, wow.
Like, 8 games.
Okay.
Because for those of you that don't know, in arena football, you only have 8 players on the field, and you only have 3 offensive linemen. You have your quarterback, you have, like, the fullback, which is basically the running back position, and then 3 receivers. And one of your offensive linemen designates himself as the tight end and can go out and catch passes at any point, which would leave you with 2 offensive linemen. So it's very high pace, so there's not a lot of running.
Mm-hmm.
Because also in arena football, the field is both half as wide and half as long as a professional football field.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but the Sharks are 5-3. They were 1-3 at one point, so they looked awful. But they're on a 4-game winning streak. Bit of a deceptive 4-game winning streak because they just blew out a bunch of bad teams, and lost won a close one against a good team. So, but it's been an exciting season. Great team to work for. I mean, if you guys ever want to watch arena football. Which is one of the things I love about arena football is that it's very different from professional football.
Yeah.
Watch. The rules are different, which is a reason I appreciate it. It's not just like kind of a lower level version of the NFL. It is different. If you ever want to catch those, all
it has its own beauty.
Broadcast. What?
It has its own beauty to it.
Yes, yes. Which is something I appreciate about it. It's very, and the fans are fun. It's a great, if you ever get to go to a game wherever you are, they're a really fun environment.
Mm-hmm.
And you can catch all of those games on YouTube.
Nice.
The National Arena League broadcasts them all from their YouTube channel.
Nice, nice.
So if you want to catch those games, also you can catch me making edit videos online. So, but it's been a good season so far. From like kind of a mid-season prediction, I would see. The road is tough ahead because they've got a lot of the better teams on the schedule.
Uh-huh.
But they should finish as a winning team, and hopefully they can, if they're lucky, they can get a home playoff spot.
Nice.
But they're still behind a couple teams.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tyler, I wish our Jacksonville Sharks nothing but the best. That's a team we can adopt completely. But yeah, thanks for the good mid-season recap. I'm glad that you had that experience. All right, Tyler, I think we just have time for one more segment. I think our official moments of the week, right?
Yes.
And I think you went first with tweets we've shared, so I'm going to go first on moment of the week, right?
Sounds good.
My moment of the week is a soccer-related moment, and it is Fulham Football Club in England beat Aston Villa in the EFL promotion championship. Or Championship League promotion. For those that don't know, promotion and relegation is instituted globally, except for the United States. Get on it. But the three teams in the Premier League, the bottom three, are relegated down to the second division in England, which is called the Championship. And then the first two are in the Championship are automatically promoted. And then teams 3 through 6 have a playoff where they play a 2-leg semifinal. And then a one-off final at Wembley to determine who gets the spot to move up. So, Fulham, which Tyler, you should take note to, and I'll tell you why you should take note to Fulham. I think you know I already because of the
score. I already know.
Fulham beat Aston Villa 1-0 on Saturday to go up into the Premier League. It's billed as the most expensive game in world sports because the prize money that the Premier League gives you is insane compared to other leagues and other sports because of their television contracts. They do revenue sharing. So they split it depending on where you finish in the league. But even like the bottom team in the Premier League makes something like 3 times as much as the winner in the second division. You know, it's a crazy amount of money. So it's a lot of money. I'm very happy for Fulham because Fulham in the 90s and 2000s brought in a lot of American players, so much that they coined the phrase Full America, is what they called them. Clint Dempsey had his best years overseas at Fulham. He scored something like 31 goals in like two or three consecutive seasons in England. with Fulham playing in the Premier League. So I'm very happy to see them back in the Premier League. But also, do you have any idea who the owner of Fulham is, Tyler?
I do.
Who is it?
In fact, it's Shad Khan.
It is Shad Khan.
The Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, and so it's amazing. In a calendar year, Shad Khan has promoted Fulham, has taken the Jacksonville Jaguars to the AFC Championship game, and is about to buy Wembley Stadium in England, who he submitted a bid for. So that's my
power
moment
moves
of the week.
Only. Power moves only.
Power moves only, man. That's my moment of the week, watching Fulham be promoted into the Premier League. Also, Ryan Sessegnon is a 17-year-old right back for Fulham, who is the most sought-after English prospect in the country right now. So hope it's going to be nice to see him play Premier League football next year. But yeah, it's just a great feeling, because when you see the fans, it's been like 7 or 8 years since they've been in the Premier League. They finally got up. The energy, the excitement, just one of the good things of sports and soccer that I love so much. So that's my moment of the week. Congrats to Fulham.
Congratulations.
Yes, cool.
And now for my moment of the week. It's a little bit of a Homer moment of the week.
Okay.
It is a University of Florida related Homer moment of the week.
I like those.
So recently, this last week, was the super regional round of the NCAA softball tournament,
right?
Postseason tournament. So the Florida Gators are ranked the number two overall seed in the tournament, and they were playing, I believe, the number 15 overall seed, the Texas A&M Aggies, for their super regional.
Mm-hmm.
So the Aggies forced a game three by winning game two after the Gators had won game one.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, this game, the way the super regionals work in baseball and softball in the NCAA, is that you have to win a best two of three series, and whoever wins goes to the College World Series.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I believe, the top of the softball games only last seven innings, traditionally. So it's the top of the seventh, and Alessio Ocasio comes in and. The Gator pitcher comes in relief of best player in the country, Gator Barnhill, Kelly Barnhill.
Mm-hmm.
I would say best player in the country. I've been saying that all year. And she comes in relief and strikes out two of the Texas A&M batters and has two outs. If they just get this last out with a 1-point lead, they have a 3-2 lead. If they can just get this out, they win the game.
Mm-hmm.
Because they bat in the bottom of the seventh, and you don't need to play that if they get it. She pitches to the Texas A&M batter blasts a 2-run homer.
Oof.
Right over her head. So the Aggies take a four to three lead.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not mistaken. I may be mistaken. It may have been a 4-2 lead.
The point is the Aggies were up.
The point is they took a lead in the bottom in the top of the seventh.
Mm-hmm.
I may have mixed up the numbers, my bad. But so the Gators finally get that last out, and now they have to go bat in the bottom of the seventh with their season on the line.
Mm-hmm.
This is the SEC regular season champions and tournament champions, and they go up, and first batter strikes out. Second bat, I believe this. I messed that up. I'm tired, y'all.
Yeah, I know.
But the point is, they don't really get anything productive, but they do get two members on base, one through a walk. So Jordan Matthews, the freshman, mm-hmm. goes up to bat. There's two outs. She is quite possibly the last person to bat for the Gators this season on possibly the last play.
Mm-hmm.
She gets the count up to two balls, two strikes, and then she gets a pitch from the senior Texas A&M pitcher. Quite possibly, if she strikes out, the last pitch at the last play of the season for the Gators. Mm-hmm. They have to go home. The seniors don't get the chance to go to the College World Series again.
Mm-hmm.
What does she do with that pitch?
She
blasts it over the center field for a 3-run home run to walk it off and win the series.
Oh, gotta love our Gators. Giving us some drama.
Sends the Gators to the Women's College World Series and sends out KPS,
mm-hmm.
the stadium, the Softball Stadium, as we know it, sends it out in style. Because now that they're it's demolished, they won't play another game there this season.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting demolished. It's getting rebuilt.
Right.
With upgrades. So last game there, as we know it, and crowd goes wild. Everything is crazy. I feel bad for the Texas A&M people coming so close.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that fishing commercial where it's like,
I'm going to get you.
Gotta be bigger than that. Like, it's a little sad, but it's also really funny. But so proud of our Gators,
mm-hmm.
and so proud of the freshman coming in and hitting that 3-run home run.
So, gotta love it. Gotta love him. Big congrats to, our softball team, our Gators, as we like to say. So yeah, go ahead and check them out in the Women's College World Series. I'm not sure when that begins, but,
I can tell you.
Tell me.
Write it down.
Yes, please.
I can do it. 3, 2, 1. It starts this Thursday, 7 p.m. on ESPN2.
Perfect.
Florida plays Georgia in the Women's College World Series.
So what we'll do is come back next week, and we can talk about the NBA Finals, talk about the Stanley Cup. No, we didn't talk about that a bit this week. We do know that the Las Vegas Golden Knights are up 1-0 over the Capitals. We will review more what happens in the following games. And maybe we'll talk a little Gator softball, you know? We'll see what happens. Give a little quick recap, you know?
We'll sprinkle it in there.
Sprinkle it in there, yeah. But yeah, Tyler, if you don't have anything else to say, I think that's it for this week's episode.
That's all from me.
That's all for you. That is all from me, Tyler. It has been wonderful speaking to you again, as always. Don't forget, we got a lot of stuff coming this summer as well. Next week, we'll be talking NBA Finals, Stanley Cup, and some softball at the minimum. Once again, we'll always have our tweets we've shared and moments of the week. Those are now staples on the show. And yeah, I guess that's it. Tyler, got anything big? Any big things coming this week?
Another Sharks home game, superhero nice. Night / education appreciation night. So
wonderful.
I'm excited for that. Excited to work another 14 plus hours.
Go as Deadpool.
On a Saturday.
Go as Deadpool.
Oh, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, not many people are going to do it. Go as Deadpool.
And I'll get to go on the field, so they'll just be like, oh, Deadpool's on the field.
Yeah, it'll be great.
This is a great idea. I'm going to do that.
I got you, friend. All right, well, I guess there's only one thing left to say. My name is Sergio.
My name is Tyler.
This has been another episode of Sideline Judgment, and we are not biased, but go Gators.
Go Gators.